Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Scott Carlson from the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Circle Pines. There's your name and lights.
All right, thank you. Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity to be here. It's an honor for me. So please pray with me. Dear Heavenly Father, first and foremost, we want to offer up praise and glory to you for allowing us to gather here today. We ask your guidance over this session. We ask that you give these men and women the wisdom, the courage, the strength and confidence as leaders to make the important decisions that are necessary to run our state and communities effectively. I ask you to bless all the people here today and their families and loved ones. I also ask, O Holy One, to grant them each a safe trip home tonight, if it be your will. Please watch over our law enforcement agencies and our armed forces. Protect them and grant them safety amidst their dangerous jobs. We pray for peace and harmony in our neighborhoods. We pray for enlightenment and fortitude for our area teachers and principals, whose task of teaching our young children can be challenging and exhausting. We pray for all the parents that they give their kids the extra attention that they need and deserve. We pray for our church and our religious leaders so that they may effectively deliver the message of hope and love to all their members. We close this prayer by saying thank you, Holy Creator, for all the gifts and grace that fall on us daily like an April rain shower. In your most holy name, amen.
Thank you
very much.
Good.
My pleasure.
Yep. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Kielash, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Hua, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Ress, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. First order of business this morning will be reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next order of business, second reading of Senate bills. There are five printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a few authors' motions on today's agenda. Without objection, we'll take the author's motions as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd move under motions that we take up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do now resolve itself into committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Mr. committee will come to order, and the chair appoints Senator Betzel to chair the committee.
Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. Chairman, members, on your desk is a list of general orders bills for consideration today, so I'd like to designate general orders 14, 15, 43, 95, 91, 119, 62, and 63. And I would yield to Senator Sharon.
The first item we have on general orders is number 14, Senate file number 643. Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when the committee do arise, Senate file number 643 be recommended to pass.
Okay. Well, before we do that, Senator Fischbach, did you have a question?
Mr. President, I was just wondering if potentially maybe the president or could explain to me General Orders 15 that was just designated. I believe that we voted on that bill. Is that the Senate file that we voted on and was defeated?
No, Senator Fischbach, that was taken up under general orders. There was a vote taken, recommended to pass. That motion did not prevail, but then the bill just stays on general orders. It can be taken up at any time after that, as opposed to if it had been taken up in the full Senate, like as a special order or in the full Senate. But when it's on general orders and the bill is defeated, it doesn't go anywhere. It is capable of taking up again. It doesn't move.
And Mr. President, is there any limit to how many times something that could be? Isn't it traditionally three times that something could be taken up?
Yes, Senator Fischbach, that you're referring to, if a bill is designated as a special order three different times and it is not taken up, then it does not have to be taken up again. That's for a special order, but this is general order, so that does not apply.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. Okay, returning. Okay, that was a point of personal information. Returning to number 643, Senator Sharon has moved when this committee do arise, Senate file number 643 be recommended pass. Senator Sharon, on that motion.
Thank you. What this bill does is allow the Commissioner of Deed to waive the current restrictions in the shared work program so that it can make another program called WIRED, which is a training program for employees, marry with the shared work program so employees can take advantage of the WIRED program. It allows the commissioner to make the shared work program flexible so that it can meet the needs of businesses whose workers are receiving the training. This is a program that was introduced to me by a company in my community that was very concerned about the up-and-coming requirements for layoffs because the needs for products are being reduced. And what this owner and CEO of the company suggested is that if we were able to find some way to make this shared work program flexible, that rather than laying off employees, he would be able to use this time to allow employees to be engaged in a training program through the WIRED grant. And for the time that they are released from work for this training, they would be able to take advantage of the shared work program. So an employee can participate with a reduction in their hours and collect unemployment for this reduction while attending the training of the work related to WIRED. The bill sunsets and applies only to those businesses whose workers are receiving training through the WIRED grant. And that concludes my explanation.
Is there discussion on Senate file number 643? Is there discussion? Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Chair.
Senator Higgins yield for a question?
Senator Sharon?
Sharon. Will the author yield?
Senator Sharon will yield. Senator Vandiver.
My question is, does this have any cost to the fund?
Senator Sharon.
As any shared work unemployment insurance payment, it would draw money from the fund. But also in the bill itself is an agreement on the part of the businesses who use this to increase their contributions back into the fund.
Thank you.
Senator Vandiver. Further discussion on Senate File 643. Seeing none, Senator Sharon renews her motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 643 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item is number 15, Senate file number 10. Senator Bonhoff, are you prepared? No. Progress requested. Progress is granted on that one. Next item is number 43, Senate file number 1012. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate file number 1012 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, this is the LCCMR annual appropriations bill, and I wanted to thank the four co-authors. The five of us are the Senate members of the Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources. We have a total of just over $26 million to allocate for the upcoming fiscal year. And I think we have a very good package to present to the members. I do have an amendment I'd like to offer first, and then I'll briefly describe the recommendations. It's the A1 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Anderson moves to amend Senate File 1012 as follows. Page 22, delete Subdivision 16 and insert. This is Amendment A-1.
On the amendment, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a few paper copies if anyone wants them.
It is on the computers.
Mr. Chair, this amendment is some existing work programs that have requested extensions of time from past year appropriations on the A1 amendment. This list has been circulated to the membership and has been approved by a majority of LCCMR members, and I don't believe any of it is controversial. So I would move the amendment.
Is there discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to, without going through every single project that we propose for funding here, I just want to mention some highlights. We continue funding groundwater testing, which is called the Geologic Atlas, the County Geologic Atlas, so we can get a better sense of how our groundwater supplies are doing around the state. We also continue an innovative project to test the water quality of trout streams and what the surface water interactions are with trout stream water quality. We have some state park acquisition projects here in Cuyuna County and Whitewater State Park, and some trail acquisitions funded for Browns Creek and the Paul Bunyan State Trail. I want to point out the Habitat Conservation Partnerships and the Metro Conservation Corridors Partnerships. Those are packages of a number of projects with a large number of partners that leverage a lot of private dollars and private volunteer efforts, and I would note that the LCCMR funds these equally, the Metro and the outstate projects, and you will see that they are both funded equally in this bill. We have an ecological ranking of CRP lands, which is important as a lot of CRP easements are expiring at the federal level. We want to try to provide some information to help us prioritize which of those we should try to use state dollars to reacquire easements and rank them by their ecological importance. We have some really good research projects, including testing for ways to remove endocrine disruptors in our waters, an emerging issue of concern. A couple of very innovative urban-based projects, including citizen-based stormwater management, which will install a number of rain gardens around a particular lake and then evaluate the effectiveness of those rain gardens at improving water quality in that lake. The other urban project is funding, it's called Energy Efficient Cities, and this will fund an outreach and energy improvement, energy efficiency projects in 7 cities around Minnesota. It's expected to reach 6,000 homes and help those homeowners to reduce their fossil fuel and carbon emissions out of their homes. And we do some continuing research on climate change and several projects related to invasive species. We did have a lot of conversation in the LCCMR about the statewide conservation and preservation plan, and a number of these projects, both research and demonstration projects, stem directly from those scientific recommendations. And we also talked a lot about jobs and talked about how we can use our natural resource investments to help put people to work in Minnesota. And we do know that we have some estimates of employment impacts, and the estimate that we have shows at least 100 jobs that will be created as a result of these investments, and many more indirect ones. So, members, I think it's a good bill, and I would urge members to support it. Be happy to take any questions.
Is there discussion on Senate File 1012? Is there discussion? Seeing none, Senator Anderson renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1012 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item is number 95 on general orders at Senate File 1904, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1904 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, this bill involves an existing Minnesota law that we call our mini COBRA law. And I know all of our members know what COBRA is. That's the ability of an employee to continue coverage after they've left their employment. Well, federal COBRA, and it's federal law, but Minnesota does have their own so-called mini COBRA, and it was actually passed some 12 years before the federal COBRA. Federal COBRA applies only to employees, though, who worked for a firm that has more than 20 employees. Our mini COBRA law that was enacted in 74 includes employers of all sizes, even those with fewer than 20 employees. So, and about 40 other states have these mini COBRAs that cover those smaller employers. A few weeks ago, with the ARRA, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, Congress amended the federal COBRA to provide 65% subsidy for those COBRA premiums for up to 9 months of coverage. It does apply only to employees who were involuntarily terminated for reasons other than misconduct, okay? That subsidy is available for all people who are eligible under the federal COBRA or a state mini COBRA like we have. So it is available for those Minnesotans who were involuntarily terminated by employers who have 20 or fewer. Now, it has an additional feature that allows people who were terminated between September 1st of last year, 2008, and February 16th of this year, who originally declined the COBRA coverage, the federal law, the Congress has said they would have a second chance to get that now that the federal subsidy is available.
Members, there are a lot of conversations going on, and I see a lot of people in the chamber who may or may not need to be here. Especially Senator Scheid's trying to present her bill, and there's a lot of folks right in the back having conversations. Please move your conversations elsewhere. Senator Scheid.
And Mr. Chairman, and it's going to affect a smaller number of people, but for those people, it's really important. So it has to do with being able to afford the COBRA coverage during this time, especially when somebody has lost their job. So this will permit those employees who were involuntarily terminated, they were among a small group of 20 or fewer employees, and they originally turned down their COBRA coverage, probably because they couldn't afford it, they would be able to have the same election period provided under the federal law to the larger employers, and this means a subsidy of 65% of their COBRA by the federal government during that time frame, and they would have to pay only 35% of that premium. And I would encourage your support.
Is there discussion on Senate File 1904? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Forgive me. I'm sorry. I need to change a date. I have an amendment, the A1 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Scheid moves to amend Senate File 1904 as follows. Page 2, line 10, delete 2009 and insert 2010. This is amendment A-1.
On the amendment, Senator Schein.
And Mr. Chairman, it's very simple. We need to make this effective through June 30th of next year, not this year, because the benefit could go till that through that time frame. I appreciate your indulgence here.
Is there discussion on the A-1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A-1 amendment, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A-1 amendment is adopted. Senator Scheid, anything further? Are you sure? Senator Scheid moves that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1904 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item on general orders is Senate File number 91, Senate File 1454, Senator Saltzman.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 1454 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Saltzman.
There, and thank you, Mr. Chair. We just heard a shared work bill from Senator Sharon, and this is an expansion of that program. It is actually a rewrite and a modernization of our current law. And as we've heard across the state, as at least I've talked to my constituents, we hear about companies during this economic recession of trying to figure out how to deal with declining sales but keeping their workers working. In some cases, we're hearing of layoffs or 10 or 20% of a workforce. And when that happens, those people lose their jobs. Under a shared work plan, the way it works is that a company can work with their employees, and instead of actually losing 10% or more of people, they're able to spread the reduction hours across their entire employee workforce, so that it may mean that a worker, instead of being completely laid off, may just have a reduction of 10% in their hours. It keeps people working. It keeps a company able to maintain the people that they've invested in and trained, and it spreads the unemployment compensation across the board. So we've worked with DEED on this, and again, we have rewritten current law so that it is more flexible. It also allows back-to-back plans for up to 2 years. It allows it to be for as short as 2 months in duration, more flexibility in hour decreases, and allows half-time work. And it also allows salaried employees to be covered by the shared work program. It is supported by the administration and by DEED, and this is something that would really help our companies right now during this economic climate. And I stand for questions.
Is there discussion on Senate File 1454? Seeing none, Senator Saltzman renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1454 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The next item before us is number 119 on general orders, Senate File 550. Is Senator Prechner-Solin in the chamber? Senator Prechner-Solin, Senate File 550.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 550 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Prechner-Solin.
Mr. Chair and members, this is the 2009 Energy Omnibus Bill, and I would like to thank the Energy Committee members for their hard work in committee this session, along with our staff, who did a phenomenal job. In this bill, we have incorporated a number of policy initiatives that will continue to move our state forward in reaching our renewable energy standards, our conservation goals, and our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. If this bill becomes law, we will have the opportunity to see cutting-edge technology such as smart grid and battery storage constructed along the Central Corridor. Utilities will have greater opportunities to expand their conservation programs and greater incentives to make these investments sooner than later. Large wind projects will be able to move forward without duplicative regulation. We will receive more information to make informed decisions on transmission, appliance energy efficiency standards, residential energy use, and expanding the SIP program. This bill will also significantly move forward the solar industry in an effort to achieve economies of scale and spur private investment in this renewable. And at this time, I'll give you a brief overview of each section in the bill. And I might say that each provision of the bill receives strong support in committee. Sections 1, 2, 21, and 28 were brought forward by the Public Utilities Commission and authored by Senator Kevin Dahl. These sections make technical changes to allow the PUC to record the proceedings with audio electronic equipment. Section 3 was brought forward by Senator Rosen to prevent delivered fuel recipients from being denied service during cold weather months. This section simply requires delivered fuel companies that receive over $150,000 in LIHEAP funds to report a number of items to
members, please. If need be, I'll have the sergeant-at-arms remove the staff. I can't remove the members. Please, please keep your conversations down. Senator Pretner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To report a number of items to the Department of Commerce, including the number of customers that they have denied service. And Senator Rosen has an amendment for this section, so I will let her explain further after I go through the remainder of this bill. Sections 4 and 6 were authored by Senator Rick Olsen and give the PUC 90 additional days to conclude rate cases. Sections 5, 13, and 25 are part of a bill authored by Senator Scott Dibble. This bill is designed to expand public utilities conservation programs and make utility SIP programs profitable. Sections 7 and 27 create a pilot program along the Central Corridor. As XL Energy has to dig up its utility infrastructure, this bill allows the PUC to approve expenditures for forward-thinking energy technologies along the Central Corridor transit zone. These projects include smart grid, battery storage, and solar. Sections 8, 9, and 29 are part of a bill carried by Senator Dibble also. This bill incorporates solar technology into XL Energy's green pricing program and also provides cost recovery for a battery project in Laverne, Minnesota, in an effort to learn how battery storage can be integrated with wind. Section 10, also introduced by Senator Dibble, would allow XL Energy to count solar energy toward their 25% wind mandate, since their 5% other renewable energy category is fully subscribed with biomass and small hydro. Section 11 was authored by Senator Kevin Dahl and clarifies the authority of the PUC to issue rate refunds. In an effort to encourage utilities to accelerate their conservation spending in this economy, Section 12 would allow them to carry forward their savings in excess of 1.5% for 3 years. Section 14 was authored by Senator Kevin Dahl and allows utilities to count strategic tree planting towards their SIP goals. Section 15 was brought forward by Senator John Dahl and would allow the Commissioner of Commerce to approve utilities to use SIP resources to satisfy customer demand for solar installations. Section 16 is a technical change authored by Senator Pappas that modifies the definition qualifying solar project. Section 17 was authored by Senator Tomasoni and allows two utilities to amend a power purchase agreement for biomass. Sections 18 and 19 exempt large wind projects from having to file for a certificate of need as they already fall under the RES. The intention is to cut down an unnecessary regulation and save staff time at the PUC and the OES, as well as for the developers. Section 20 requires Commerce to provide an annual report on the adequacy of the state's transmission infrastructure. Section 22 instructs the Legislative Energy Commission to study our state's SIP program. Section 23 was already passed on the floor as a standalone bill. This section requires the Legislative Energy Commission to analyze the adoption of statewide appliance energy standards. Section 24 instructs the Legislative Energy Commission to study and make recommendations on implementing a low-carbon fuels policy. Section 26, also authored by Senator Kevin Dahl, requires a Legislative Energy Commission study on residential energy use disclosure. And Section 27 requires the Public Utilities Commission to conduct a study on the automatic cost recovery riders currently in law and consider other forms of rate regulation that may be used. And, Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks, but Senator Rosen does have an amendment.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A8 amendment in front of us, please.
Secretary will report the A8 amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend Senate File 550 as follows. Page 2, delete Section 3, page 23. This is the A-8 amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This does deal with Section 3. I'm deleting the entire section that deals with the reporting for the delivered fuels. And basically, there has been a lot of changes and negotiations on this portion of it. On lines 2.6, we're extending, or we're making the report just a two-year report for August 1st of 2010 and August 1st of 2011. And we struck the words next following the and put in for the previous heating season. We also took out lines 2.8 that deals with the total number of customers and 2.18 because as it is right now, a vendor has to sign an agreement with the Office of Energy Security, and that information is already on the vendor agreement. And also for the information that we're going to be requiring in this report, we did add information on the amendment, lines 1.35. All the information reported under this section must be summary data that does not identify any particular customer. And, Mr. Chair, with that, I'd like to do an oral amendment and put in the word vendor and customer, or vendor and, in front of customer.
Where did that need to go?
On line 1.36. After the word particular, put in vendor and. That would be an oral amendment, Mr. Chair.
Just for future reference, if you know of a change that needs to be made, it sometimes helps to incorporate the change before the amendment is reported, so that because otherwise we have to then amend it. But the Secretary will move the amendment to the amendment.
Senator Rosen moves to amend her amendment, the A8 amendment, as follows. On line 36, after particular, insert vendor and.
Is there discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that just about does it for the for this report that we're requiring to be sent to the Office of Energy Security. And along with that vendor agreement that will be signed, there will be an internal audit from the Office of Energy Security that's not put in legislation, but we need to get some information how these LIHEAP dollars, and LIHEAP dollars are federal funds that are to be used for the elderly, the disabled, and the low-income families for their heating fuel. And the information that will be provided in this report will tell us how those dollars are being used. Currently, this last heating season, the state of Minnesota received $104 million in LIHEAP dollars, and they're projected to get $164 million in LIHEAP dollars. And there are some vendors that make deal with a tremendous amount of LIHEAP dollars, and this report will give the Office of Energy Security the comfort of knowing that these dollars are being spent wisely and there's not a big discrepancy in late fees, partial fills, testing fees, and thereon. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to speak in support of Senator Rosen's amendment and her really great work on this issue. She's been trying hard to make a difference here for people who need heat in their homes, and I really appreciate her work.
So further discussion on the A8 amendment. Seeing none, the question occurs on the A8 amendment as amended. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A8 amendment as amended is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 550.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A10 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A10 amendment. This has Senator Koch's name on it?
That's correct.
Okay, the Secretary will report the A10 amendment.
Senator Dill moves to amend Senate File 550 as follows. Page 18, after line 21, insert This is Amendment A-10.
On the amendment, Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is an amendment that repeals the language that says we will not construct a new nuclear power plant in this state. If you didn't hear that, this is the amendment that repeals the language that allows us to construct a new nuclear power plant in this state. And I've shared this amendment with Senator Pretner Solon, and I'm hoping that she can accept it. Now, all of us have been around this place long enough to know that the countryside is worried about the things we're doing here that are going to increase the cost of electricity. The municipal utilities, the county co-ops, and so on that provide electricity out across this state are concerned about the things we do, all the mandates and enforcing the purchase of expensive renewable energy. We need to balance that off with some cheaper electricity from nuclear power. And for those of you that are interested in controlling CO2 and worried about the greenhouse gas problem and climate change, this is a very good amendment to support because there's absolutely no CO2 produced from a nuclear power plant. Now, I was a co-author of the 1994 Prairie Island bill that allowed them to store spent nuclear fuel in a dry cast storage system outside so that plant could continue operating. And on that bill with me was Senator Steve Murphy and Senator Jim Metzen and Senator Steve Novak and one other senator who I don't remember the name right now, but we all spent a lot of time studying that issue. We went to Yucca Mountain, we went to Virginia where the dry cast storage was used on the banks of the James River. We studied it extensively and we came to the conclusion that nuclear power is good and we need it and we need to continue it. Now, there have been five or six bills introduced into this Senate to do just exactly what this amendment does. Although there haven't been hearings on these bills, to my knowledge, we did have a hearing last week on the Energy Commission, or the Energy Task Force that Senator Pretner Solon chairs. And that task force used to be the Electric Energy Task Force, started in 1994. I've served on it ever since that time. And it's clear to me that this is one of the options we need to have on the table in order to meet our energy needs for the future in a cost-effective way, and also to take into consideration the climate change issues that we are facing. So I respectfully request your support on this amendment.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dill, I understand the drive for the amendment, and I can appreciate your sentiments about it. We have begun a discussion, and as you stated, there have been seven bills introduced in the Senate that wanted to repeal the moratorium. We had the beginnings of a good discussion of it when we had a joint meeting of the Legislative Energy Commission as well as the House and Senate Energy Committees. And I had agreed that if the bill made the deadline in the other chamber that we would hear it in the Senate. It did not make deadline in the other chamber. I think that it does need further discussion, and I feel at this time I cannot support it. I think there are still significant questions about storage that need to be addressed. We do have concerns about how we will address our base load in the future, and this does not have carbon emissions. But I think that we need to, as I said, it's been a topic that has not been addressed very thoroughly for a long time in the Senate. There is new technology. There is more information that needs to be uncovered. And so at this time, I would urge you to vote against this amendment, and I would ask for a roll call vote.
A roll call vote has been requested. Are there three hands for a roll call vote? Seeing three hands, there will be a roll call vote. Is there further discussion on the A-10 amendment? Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Pretner Solon's comments, we did have some discussion in the Legislative Energy Commission, and I appreciated those discussions. We had some discussion. I offered this amendment in committee. And at the time, Senator Pretner Solon, I pulled the amendment because of some of these, because we hadn't had a hearing. I sort of bought into that argument at the time. And since it's been about a week since that committee hearing, and since then I've realized that I was thinking wrong. that this amendment is the start of the discussion, that we're not allowed to have the nuclear energy discussions that we need to have around waste and cost and safety and regulation until we do this simple amendment. We're really overthinking what this bill does. In 1994, before my time in the Senate, as I understand it, there was a lot of discussion around waste, dry cask storage, and at the end of that, as part of the deal, the moratorium was put in place, and it was sort of the end of the discussion. It sort of put the period, the punctuation on that discussion and ended it with the moratorium. So I don't think we can have the appropriate discussions that we need to have around nuclear power and how it balances our portfolio until we first remove the moratorium. So I would argue that this is the important first step and really only a first easy step. So I would encourage folks to support this amendment.
Further discussion on the A-10 amendment. Is there further discussion? Senator Wortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm not sure why anyone would oppose this. I keep hearing global warming is a crisis. It's a crisis. We have a crisis of carbon emissions, too many carbon emissions. Well, if we do, shouldn't we be looking at alternatives? I don't buy into the crisis. But many people in this chamber do and have, and I've seen it in their legislation, so it seems to me that we should be looking at all alternatives, including nuclear energy. I'm not sure that the fear of safety for nuclear energy balances out what I hear is overwhelming fear of global warming, and I hope members in this chamber will be consistent and vote to explore all alternatives.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to join Senator Prettner-Solin and speak against this amendment. I was here in 1994 when we had long, drawn-out debates, very difficult discussions about the future of nuclear power in Minnesota. And at that time, one of the big issues was the question of where we would store the waste. And at that time, we were promised by the nuclear industry that permanent national safe repository for nuclear waste was right around the corner. Well, guess what? It's 15 years later. We still don't have one. In fact, it's getting probably less likely that Yucca Mountain will open now than it was 15 years ago. And so I think debate is healthy. Debate is good. We should always discuss issues and not try to hide them or avoid them. And we did spend, I forget how many hours, in the Energy Commission debating this the other day. So it's been healthy to have that discussion. But I do think that it's wrong to suggest that nuclear power at this time is either clean or cheap. Maybe someday it will be. It has great potential. But yes, it has no carbon emissions, and that's a good thing. But highly toxic radioactive waste is a byproduct of this nuclear power, and we don't know what to do with it. So I didn't think it was responsible to build all these plants when we didn't have a solution, and I don't think it's responsible to build more when we don't have a place to put this nuclear waste. And we know that at this time, at least, any further building of plants would only happen with enormous multi-billion-dollar subsidies coming from the federal government. So it's not cheap either. Maybe someday we'll resolve those issues, and it will be a great solution, and it will be clean, but not until we solve those fundamental questions of cost and storage, and we haven't done that yet. So I think it's premature. We've put ourselves on a good path in this state to find homegrown sources of energy to meet our needs so we can truly be energy independent. I think we should stay on that path and not get distracted by the nuclear one.
Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. President. I speak in favor of the amendment for more than one reason. If France can reclaim, why can't we get the U.S. to consider reclamation of what's the spent fuel? You know, we could get that. We've got good scientists. We've got good universities, every place we can. We've got good laboratories in this country. And here we are dickering over whether we should not ever put up a nuclear plant again. How short-sighted do we want to be? Maybe the president, while he's over in Europe, could ask France how they did that and get a few lessons there and bring them home to us. Thank you.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, rise in support of this amendment. I'd just like to say I think it is time for an honest and a transparent discussion on this. And we've had our little discussions, but I would bet in this chamber every single one of the senators have received a tremendous amount of information pushing towards, let's talk about nuclear. I know in my own Senate district, probably 500 letters have come in from constituents talking about why are you not having this honest, transparent discussion about nuclear. But I must say, from the time that I first got here 7 years ago to now, we have definitely increased the discussion, and we are being, this discussion is mounting, and we're getting a lot more information out there. But members, our constituents are asking us what is going on with nuclear, and I do think we need to break open this discussion and really get down to the true facts of this entire issue.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would encourage members to not support this amendment. You know, much has been made about the role that nuclear power might play in addressing global warming, but a recent study shows that if nuclear power is going to play a meaningful role in greenhouse gas emission reductions, we'd have to build a new plant every 2 weeks until the middle of this century. With the plants coming in at about $4 billion apiece and no investors in sight to fund those, that seems like a highly unlikely prospect. As it is, members and Mr. Chair, if we're just going to replace the existing nuclear power that's the plants that are now aging, we would have to build a new reactor every 4 or 5 months for the next 40 years or so. Our time is probably far better spent on looking at the innovations that are in hand that we know are going to be able to help us address our energy needs in a clean and renewable way, distributed energy, hydro, wind, etc., and deal with the variability of that power as well. This idea that nuclear power is somehow extremely inexpensive and is less highly subsidized than others also is a misnomer and a misperception. And in fact, in 2006, we subsidized the nuclear power industry to the tune of $9 billion, which compares to renewables taxpayer support at about $6 billion, and only about $2 billion went into conservation. Conservation and efficiency has a huge potential, which we are barely tapping into. Members. And as I see it, the news, latest breaking news I've seen, this waste issue is becoming more remote and a more difficult issue to solve. We talk a lot about reprocessing, and of course France is the best known country at doing significant reprocessing, but in France they highly subsidize their nuclear power industry. I don't think our taxpayers, our ratepayers are ready to do that. That's certainly not been the tradition that we've had in our country, and I don't think that's the road that we want to go down. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Senator Dibble, your argument against this amendment is that we would need too many of them in order to make a difference. But when we don't build them for 40 years and we don't allow anyone to build one, that's the situation we're in. But I don't think the fact that we couldn't get enough of them up and operating in time to make an impression on the greenhouse gases doesn't mean that we shouldn't start today to open that door again so that that option's out there. And secondly, the lack of options for producing the power is causing us to use the perfect small point energy source, natural gas, in big giant generators, and that's increasing the demand and increasing the cost of the natural gas because that is the second cleanest thing we have to burn. But it is competing with our residential use and all the other uses for natural gas. So I think we should, this is a good amendment. It doesn't, you're right, it's not going to change the world overnight, but it will certainly get us moving in a better direction.
Sarah Sanjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I want to thank Senator Dill for bringing this amendment forward today. Members, it's been 14 years. It's time to get rid of this moratorium. It's time, if you will, to put a hole in the wall for providing nuclear power, the safe, clean, reliable, in my mind, nuclear power. It's important. We're talking about global warming almost repetitively in this body over the last couple of years, and we refuse to recognize the fact that nuclear power is simply a tremendous asset in terms of carbon footprint issues and everything else you can think about. Mr. President, we treat patients with radioactivity. We run submarines, battleships, aircraft carriers with radioactivity, nuclear power. Why can't we produce electricity with nuclear power? And we all know we can. It's done across this country. It's done across this world. It's time for Minnesota. Let's drop this moratorium. Let's give our power plant industry an opportunity to consider it. Everything that might be an issue within this room related to nuclear power is going to be handled through the regulatory process. Certainly not an easy process to move through. We'll deal with the waste. That process will deal with everything that's related to safety as it relates to nuclear power. So, Mr. President and members, it's time to do this. 14 years is too long. Let's break down this barrier. Let's break down this wall. Let's move forward and give our power industry a chance at least to consider nuclear power.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, when I think about this, I just get so frustrated. I have to take a deep breath. The storage of nuclear waste was a promise to us by the federal government when we started building nuclear plants in the United States. A promise. And it's only people like we have in this chamber that keep that promise from happening. And it is very frustrating. Yucca Mountain should have been done. The money's there. We've all been taxed on it. It should be finished. It is a promise to the citizens of the United States that needs to be completed. It needs to be completed now. Homegrown sources of energy, another joke. Ethanol out of corn? Well, it was a great start, and we should move from that. Biomass, we have no biomass. We ran out of biomass when we're not producing anything. We have no byproducts to burn. And, all our other homegrown sources. Let's see, oil, natural gas, uranium, coal future, all banned. All banned in the United States. We have 400-plus years of this kind of energy, and we're shutting that all down so that we can come up with something else. Wind and solar, a great lie to the public, members. 0.5% of the energy produced in the United States today is wind and solar. It will take more than 50 years to come up with enough wind and solar energy to even supplant some of the coal plants that you want to shut down, the nuclear plants you want to shut down. And you are afraid to remove a moratorium that only engages us in the conversation? Please, members, vote in favor of this amendment.
Is there further discussion on the A-10 amendment? Senator Kolk.
Mr. Chair, and I'll try not to repeat, but I have to address a couple of the objections to this amendment. People talk about the waste, and I represent a district, Monticello, where we currently have a nuclear plant, and we are storing waste on site. And so no one, save perhaps Senator Murphy in this chamber, has more skin in that game than I do. Frankly, my parents live minutes from where it's being stored. However, I see this lifting of the moratorium as putting pressure on the federal government to do something about it. Having the moratorium in place has done nothing to solve the waste problem. Nothing. So let's take another tact. Let's remove the moratorium and put the pressure on. Second of all, I've heard about let's not let this be a distraction. We're moving ahead with renewables, and let's not distract. And I cannot argue with the fact that the last 3-4 years that I've been in the legislature, almost the entire conversation of the Energy Committee has been dominated by renewable energy. Maybe 95% of our conversation is surrounded by new renewables. And here's the problem with that. Two things. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can deal with renewables and we can deal with nuclear energy. And second of all, we heard a testifier who was actually speaking against nuclear energy in the Legislative Energy Commission, and he said that France has got 80% of their energy from nuclear energy, and that's created a problem. They have actually so much nuclear energy they can't get away from nuclear energy, and he said no. So then he said focus on the renewables. But here's the problem, he's falling into the same trap that France did. I would argue that any time you have any energy source that you focus too heavily on, that is the problem. So we need to balance our portfolio, and that's what this does. Finally, as in regard to cost, because we've been debating a little bit of cost, and frankly, I've heard some numbers. I know that power plants are expensive to build. I also know that nuclear energy is the cheapest form of baseload energy. But this moratorium, this amendment in front of us, does nothing about requirements. There's no requirement for a certain percentage of nuclear energy. There's no preference for nuclear energy in this bill. And unlike the renewables in this bill, there's no automatic cost recovery for nuclear energy. So this does not remove any of the requirements by the PUC. They will still have to look at all aspects of costs surrounding any new plant that would have to be built. And so again, please, members, let's vote for this amendment. Let's begin this conversation. Let's add balance to our portfolio.
Senator John Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I urge members to vote no on this amendment. We do need this discussion, but it needs to happen in a much broader forum than this, than on this floor. The issue still comes back down to the issue of waste. That has been going on for years. It's not been resolved, and it will not be resolved if we lift the moratorium. It will just put more storage on new sites. This is a moral issue, if nothing else. This material will last for thousands of years. We created it in our lifetime. It is time to fix the problem in our lifetime. And we cannot build more plants or even have the discussion until we decide how we're going to deal with a product, a byproduct of producing energy that will kill you if you're near it for the next 10,000 years or more. I think it is our responsibility to fix this problem once and for all. What do we have to do before we start open up new discussions on power plants? Thank you.
Sarah Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm sure the residents at home are a little puzzled. I thought the moral issue was that we didn't want to have so much reliance on foreign oil. Now the moral issue is something else. Nobody in this chamber, I don't believe, thinks that we could rely solely on wind energy in Minnesota. The same thing is true for nuclear energy. Nobody suggests that we can rely on nuclear energy for all of our energy in the state of Minnesota. We need to balance our sources. I agree with that about the foreign oil sources. I agree about that with respect to the renewables. We need to pursue this to balance the options, as Senator Koch has rightly argued. I heard a comment in this chamber today that it would be such a terrible thing if we pursued nuclear energy because it would mean federal subsidies in the hundreds of millions of dollars to the state. I actually heard that argument. We are pursuing economic stimulus dollars. These are economic stimulus funds if we build nuclear energy plants in Minnesota. What are we thinking? That's a good thing. I thought we were pursuing it all over the state for projects for transportation, for schools, for healthcare, and I think we should be doing it for energy as well. I just want to leave the members with one comment. For those of you that are afraid of the waste, that are fearful of nuclear energy, I leave you with the words of Bertrand Russell. To conquer your fear is the beginning of wisdom. Please vote wisely. Vote for this amendment.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, I support this amendment in deference to my seatmate here, Senator Dahl. I see this as a technical issue. It's a technical issue. It's not a political issue. This is something that we have to approach with the best knowledge that we can. And I support it because I think we need to turn it into the technical hands that need to look at it. In our state, hopefully, the PUC has the technical expertise to look at this the first time that a permit comes up and decide whether we have the ability to store the nuclear waste, whether the nation has put aside enough to be able to watch it for the next number of years that might be a million years. But I think we do have the expertise to put it aside and to take care of it for perhaps the next 1,000 years. And after 500 years from now, we'll be able to put it aside for the next 10,000 years. And maybe 5,000 years from now, we'll be able to solve it forever. Or maybe we'll have an alternative. But this is a technical issue. As far as reprocessing, we are reprocessing today. That's where all our nuclear weapons come from. We reprocess and we produce nuclear waste that's less polluting than or less dangerous than the materials that come out of these nuclear plants. We do have storage. The storage is in Carlsbad, New Mexico, a mile underground. We ship it there every day of the week. So we do have a lot of these things. We also are launching nuclear submarines, nuclear carriers. We're producing these every day. The improvements in the technology is happening every day around the world. But it's a technical situation. The Russians and the in Kazakhstan, where they've had some of these plants, they've had very, very poor oversight. The Chernobyl disaster was because they were not building those plants to high standards. So what we need to do is we need to be very vigilant on what we're doing. I believe nuclear power, if handled right, is safe. And I think we can also evaluate what needs to be done in the future to be safe. Now, as far as cost, don't be misled. It's not cheap. It isn't cheap. But it is a very low polluting fuel. It doesn't produce the carbon from its operations. It will produce carbon from mining, from building the plants, all of those kinds of things, but it doesn't produce the carbon as it's being run and used. So this is a technical issue, and I think what I want to do is take it out of the political hands and put it into the technical hands. And I support the amendment, and I hope you do too.
There's a further discussion on the A-10 amendment. Senator Prettner-Solin. Okay. Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, to members, I think I compliment Senator Dill for bringing this up. Not only such an important issue, but you know, so far the session's been kind of a yawner, and it's good to have something that we can kind of debate a little bit. I recall, and I think the whole Yucca Mountain, I bet a lot of people here have probably been to Yucca Mountain. That's been over the years. A lot of legislators have went there. You know, we spent $10 to $13 billion on Yucca Mountain. I think, depending on, as we well know, Harry Reid, the senator, is from there, and I think that's what put the damper on Yucca Mountain for a while. If that changes, it surely could go the other way. It's interesting sometimes how Europeans are going with the nuclear, and a lot of people here, of course, are we love the European trains and all sorts of things, but on this issue, we seem to go against it. But I will, I'm going to vote for it. Thank you, Senator Dill, for bringing it up. I hate to even mention this because it gives away my age, but I have to. I can remember about 52 years ago when I was in the submarine service in New London, Connecticut. And the submarine Nautilus, it just went under the North Pole. This was, I think, was about 1957, somewhere in there, 1958. And for 52 years, we've had a nuclear-powered submarine. And I don't think there's been anybody that's been on that submarine that has had any ill effects of being on a nuclear submarine. And I believe there's it's been 50-some years we still have submarines. So I just, thanks for bringing it up. I'm totally supportive, and it's a time for Minnesota to move off the dime and be a little progressive and join with a lot of people that have finally realized that this is something that we all should discuss, and I'm sure we will, and thanks for bringing it up.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to briefly restate that I believe that this discussion or this topic needs a broader discussion, that there still is a lot of information to be obtained, and I think we can continue to have that discussion. We have plenty of time before this moratorium needs to be lifted, and I can tell you that next year we will be having these discussions. There is more technology that needs to be understood. There's reprocessing issues that need to be understood. And we need a better understanding about storage. At this time, I would urge you to vote against the amendment.
Is there further discussion? Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. This issue has been around for quite a long time. Sparks a lot of interest, as you can hear here on the Senate floor. People talk about moral issues, and it's a moral issue on one side or it's a moral issue on the other side. Folks, we all have a different set of moral values, and I don't believe that the people who don't approve of nuclear power are, you know, we don't need to demonize them, and I don't believe that people that support nuclear power need to be demonized. We have a, you know, what I feel is a logical difference of opinion. I respect the chair of the committee's wish to keep this inside of her committee's realm. And members, you know, quite frankly, I gave up my spot on the Electric Energy Task Force to Senator Dahl this year for several different reasons, but one is I was pretty busy doing other things, and I didn't mind doing it. But when this issue comes up, it makes me maybe wish I hadn't done that, with all respect to Senator Dahl, because this is a very important issue, folks. But with the way the law is crafted right now, we can't get to a place in front of the appropriate regulatory commissions to even talk about this. And that's what's disturbing. You know, the regulatory process, and I think somebody mentioned it earlier, but it's a very exhaustive and difficult process to go through. The regulators here in the state of Minnesota, they take their time. They do a very good job of making sure that the public is protected, both economically and environmentally. I trust their judgment, and I wouldn't mind them making decisions on this. But I also represent two communities that have, we're a host community, much like Senator Colk and Monticello, who have a lot of, as you called it, skin in the game. Now, I think our communities that I represent may have a little different swing on things than some other communities, both for and both against. But the one thing that I think we can agree on is that the regulatory process gives these people, all these local units of government, all the environmental groups, a place to appropriately voice their opinions. I would like to see that process used. What I believe that the Electric Energy Task Force needs to be doing in the meantime is working on these issues of better education, better awareness on reprocessing, on what the process is right now and where it stands in regards to are we going to open up Yucca Mountain? That's the question. Because, folks, I can tell you, I would pitch a pup tent tomorrow on the berm right next to those casts sitting there at Prairie Island. Those are 122 tons of 6-inch reinforced steel that has a moderator in it, and a lot of people here have been there. You know, you can walk up and hug these casts. It's not anything to be afraid of. It's something to be respected. And that's what those folks at these nuclear plants do. They know how to fully respect the potential of that power. Because, folks, that potential could both do vast amounts of good. I mean, there's 1,200 megawatts being pumped out at Prairie Island every day. That, if you follow the equation of 1 watt of electricity, or I'm sorry, 6 watts of electricity equals $1 of gross national product, that is a lot of money for businesses all across the state, whether they're out in Dassel or up in Thief River Falls. It's economic opportunity. Now, I believe strongly in solar and wind power and a lot of the new technologies that are coming in the form of green cars, whether it's hydrogen or fuel cell technology or batteries, whatever it may be. I believe strongly that we need to increase our dollars towards those endeavors. And I would hope that the Electric Energy Task Force would take another look at that and use some of that money that is in that account to make sure that we continue to strive towards a cleaner environment in the future. But folks, nuclear power can help be can help solve some of our environmental problems. And I think that we really need to put Senator Dill's amendment on this bill and run a dual-track process using our Electric Energy Task Force to answer some of the questions that are left unanswered out there. When is Yucca Mountain going to be open? I think that's a key question. I really believe it is. People on both sides of the argument today, I think, agree on that. And we have a lot of common ground to work on here. So, Senator Dahl, you've got your plate full in that committee.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I enjoyed Senator Artman's reference to fear. If you address fear, it may lead to wisdom. It caused me to sit here and be distracted by thoughts about all sorts of statements about fear, including one that has something to do with fools only treading where angels fear, going where angels fear to tread. But I do think that there is central to this amendment a question is whether or not the process to get to the dialogue that everybody wants to get to about nuclear power and whether or not it ought to be a part of our portfolio is whether or not removing this moratorium to have the conversation is the process to take, or to leave the moratorium in place and allow other processes such as our committee discussions and other informational hearings that we have help lead us to an action. To me, that's the central question that I'm being asked. I'm not being asked to decide if nuclear power is the way to go. I'm not being asked to say that I think it's preferable to other kinds of energy. I'm being asked by this amendment to say which process do we think will advance an effective scientific discussion of nuclear power. And so if I frame the question in that way, I'm rising to speak in favor of Senator Dill's amendment because I do think this methodology will cause that to happen more rapidly and more effectively.
Is there further discussion on the A-10 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, members, I respectfully ask that you vote yes on this amendment. Please vote yes for nuclear power. Please vote yes for less CO2. Please vote yes for less climate change. Please vote yes for cheaper energy. Please vote yes for nuclear power. Please vote yes on this amendment.
The Secretary will take the roll on the A-10 amendment. All senators voted who desire to vote. The Secretary will close the roll. There being 42 ayes and 24 nays, the amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 550. Seeing none, Senator Prettner-Solin renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 550 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. We will now revert to number 15 on general order, Senate file number 10, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate file number 10 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment I'd like you to hand out. That's the A-52.
Secretary will report the
A-52.
The Secretary will report the A-52 amendment.
Senator Bonoff moves to amend Senate File 10 as follows. Page 1, delete Subdivision 1 and insert. This is Amendment A-52.
On the amendment, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I address the specifics of the amendment, let me remind members, I know that this is the second time we have addressed this particular bill, and this is the shared services bill that requires school districts to, whenever possible, utilize the cost benefits of shared services and shared purchasing so that we can allow the maximum dollars to go directly to the classroom. In addition, this bill provides for the Department of Education to hire a consultant to work with our school districts in partnership to examine how they may best leverage shared services to deliver the business of education in the most cost-effective manner. You know, just today we have been meeting in the Education Committee going over our education bill. And it is with some real mixed emotions that I will be supporting that bill, because that bill contains a 3.2% cut. Members, the education bill contains a 3.2% cut, and that's a bill I'm going to vote for. But do I think that's a great thing? No, I think that's an awful thing. But that is the times that we find ourselves in, and it is not going to get better. It's not going to get better because there are certain things that are against us. Our changing demographics means that more of our students require intervention, require extra help. We have declining enrollment. We have an old structure in terms of how we are delivering our education with 360 school districts and then many, many more charter schools. The machine of delivering public education has gotten very big and unwieldy and is costly. So we may, this session, I suspect, be also asked to vote on raising revenues in order to give the kinds of services that we all know the people of Minnesota deserve and expect. Well, I would assert that no member in this body ought to vote to make cuts or raise revenue if they are not willing to do the very elementary first steps of looking at the way they're doing business and discovering whether or not there isn't potential savings by re-engineering their structures. And if we do not have the courage to do that as legislators, then we ought not to have the audacity to go to the public and tell them we are cutting and we are asking to raise revenue. That is not acceptable. This bill does those things I've outlined in a gentle fashion. It allows for school districts to not have to use this shared purchasing approach if, in fact, they have a regional need, if there's a relationship that they have with a local business, if, in fact, they're utilizing services that are already in a joint powers agreement. We have many exceptions that I highlighted last time. I would now ask your attention to the amendment that I have before you. One of the things that has come forward during this process is that many of our school districts are already doing shared services and shared purchasing. We have, in fact, done surveys to find out about that. This amendment says that when there are joint powers or shared service arrangements, that they be told to the Department of Ed, who will then make sure that they're on the Department of Administration's website. The Department of Ed will link their website to the Department of Admin's website. We have heard from our school districts that the Department of Admin's website isn't updated as often as they'd like, and so they aren't even certain that they're getting the best deal at that moment. This addition and change to the bill provides for that. In addition, I was told that there was still concern that the documentation section of the bill would be onerous. Members, we took off any need to audit the exceptions, but I have inserted, based on a request from school districts, you can see on the amendment line 1.25 says the school district or charter school may use section 471.345 to satisfy this requirement. That section is the section of statutes that relates to our uniform municipal contracting law. That says that the very way that they are purchasing now with regard to competitive bidding will suffice to fulfill this section of this bill. And then lastly, with regard to the amendment, it has been brought to my attention that there is some concern that if we in fact do make some broad sweeping changes, for example, if on a regional basis, after working with a consultant, school districts decide to pull certain services out of their purview of the individual district and deliver them on a regional basis, of which I am very hopeful they will be doing, that we should we see significant savings, we do not want a windfall that is limitless to go to a consultant. And so there is a safeguard in the amendment that says the statewide total deduction for this section must not exceed $2.5 million per year. And based on what's happening in other states, we think that that should be appropriate. So that concludes the amendment part of this presentation.
Is there discussion on the A-52 amendment? Discussion. Seeing none, Senator Bonhoff moves the A-52 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A-52 amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on Senate File 10? Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Senator Bonhoff's work on this, and particularly the amendment that we just put on. Mr. Chair, this legislation is getting better. The last 2 weeks, we've put in some good conversation, some good thought on it. I also want to thank Commissioner Segrin and her staff and the governor's office. This does need to be a part of our discussion going forward. Senator Bonhoff and I do not agree on the K-12 budget bill that you made a reference to, but we do on this shared services legislation ask for your green vote today.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, I'm looking at the bill and with the amended language that you have in it, and I'd like to bring your attention to page 1, line 4. We still have the essence of your original bill still here. If I can read the first line on subdivision 1, for fiscal year 2010 and later, a school district or charter school is required to purchase goods and services through this shared process. One of the concerns we heard about your original bill was that the required portion was detrimental in some opinions of our school boards and our superintendents, and that they would rather not have such a strict mandate but have the option to exercise a purchase. And I'm just wondering, I know that was a discussion here earlier when your bill did not pass, and I'm wondering why you didn't alter that, because it was a major concern on the floor of the Senate.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, when we did the survey of the school districts, we found that 75% of the districts were participating in one form or another of shared purchasing. And while that's wonderful, that says 25% are not participating. And if we do have a commitment to make sure that we are delivering education in the most economical and efficient manner possible, it is going to require 100% of our school districts at the table working on this project. Now, Senator Limmer, the exemptions that are spelled out in Subdivision 2, so that, Senator Limmer, I want to make sure every school district is attentive to this bill and this requirement. But given that they're all doing that, let's say now 100% are going to pay attention, they've got five different ways to exempt themselves from this requirement. So I was not willing to take out the mandatory nature, Senator Limmer, because I wanted to make sure that 100% of schools were our partner in at least considering purchasing in this fashion. Yet, I do understand that particularly in some of rural Minnesota and different constraints and agreements that are made, there are reasons why that won't work. And so, Senator Limmer, every time somebody has come forward with an exception, it's actually been incorporated. And so I have not, at this point, heard of any reason why a school district feels as though their exception is not covered.
Senator Jen Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been listening to people that are superintendents in particular that have been concerned about this mandate. But I think just having come from education where we were fussing a little bit about the use of the word all, you won't find that here. So when it requires sharing services and getting involved in this process, it doesn't mean that everything they buy or every service they deliver has to be shared. They need to get engaged. One of the things, the key things that was when we were discussing this bill, is we've got, 300 and how many school districts do we have? 340? Now? Only 113 of them are a part of the state contract, which can save mucho bucks. They don't have to buy every one of the 800 products that there are through the contracts that admin has. But there are some items that the admin is sure that they have the best possible price and could save school districts some large amount of money. That still frees them for the kinds of things that they might want to buy locally to honor the relationships they have with local business. Senator Bonhoeff has bent over backwards to make as much flexibility here, but the idea is to get the notion of looking for the efficiencies that can be had through sharing services in a multitude of kind of arrangements. It isn't one size fits all, but just to be a part of this process. That's what this is about. There's no punishment. There's lots of resources to draw on. And so I urge you to support this bill.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When this bill was first brought before the Education Committee, I was not really supportive. But Senator Bonhoeff has worked hard to tailor this bill so that it addressed many of the concerns that we had. And members, I think a lot of what you may still be hearing from superintendents and school board members from your districts may reflect the original bill and not the bill as it is presented and amended today. And in addition to the many changes that have been made to provide the exemptions, I also, in Finance Committee, put on a three-year limit. This would sunset in 3 years. Because in my way of thinking, if this doesn't save districts money, and we're just asking them to look at this program before they purchase, basically, then they shouldn't have to look at it any longer. So I think it will go away if it doesn't work. And that is in the bill as it is today. So I hope you are paying attention to the bill as it is being presented today and not as we heard it when it was first introduced.
So further discussion, Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, first, a bad bill is a bad bill. And this is a bad bill. What we did is we originally had a three-year, for 2010, 11, and 12. We've taken that away. But the overriding thing that bothers me the most about this bill is, we have the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Minnesota Rural Education Association, Association of Metropolitan School District, Schools for Equity and Education. You can go on and on and on. If they're not for this, and are we saying then that they're not interested in saving any money? Are we interested in that they won't use the 800 programs that the Department of Administration has or anything that's out there? So I guess I'm having a hard time feeling that all of these people and the people that I've talked to in my district, and granted, I realize the governor's on the other side of this, but the people that are on the ground in my Senate district, to a person, are telling me we're already doing these things. And so I'm going to vote no.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, you actually brought something important to our attention. In the A52 amendment that's before you, it deleted the words after year 2010. It deleted 2011 and 2012. And so I'd like to make a verbal amendment at this time. I apologize, members, where it says on line 1.3, for fiscal year 2010, if you could put a comma and insert 2011 and 2012 and strike and later.
The Secretary will report the amendment to the A52 amendment.
Senator Bonoff moves to amend her A52 amendment adopted today as follows. On line 3, after 2010, insert a comma and insert 2011 and 2012 and delete and later.
Is there discussion on the motion to amend the A52 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A14 amendment. I'd move the amendment.
The Secretary will report the A14 amendment.
Senator Fredrickson moves to amend Senate File 10 as follows. Page 2, line 9. This is amendment A14.
Mr. Chairman, members, this amendment goes to the exemption subdivision. And I had it drafted and pursuing it because of some remarks that were made in Finance Committee that Department of Administration, Department of Education weren't looking for a long explanation of why a district would exercise one of these exemptions. And all this amendment says is a statement or notation on the invoice fulfills the requirement of the of explaining why they used one of these exemptions.
Senator Fredrickson, we'll need a second here until we can get the amendment up on the computers. Okay, the amendment is up now. Is there discussion on the A14 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Fredrickson moves the A14 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The A14 amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion on Senate file number 10? Seeing none, Senator Bonoff moves that when this committee to arise, Senate file number 10, as amended, be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now rise and report.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate will come to order. Senator Polgemiller.
Mr. President, I move the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the Secretary, be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Under the business of motions and resolutions, we'll, without objection, we'll revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. There is an addendum. Senator Polgemiller? Senator Polgemiller?
Mr. President, I move that the reports of the committees printed in the addendum be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. The bills printed in the addenda are given their second reading. Second reading. 13th order of business is announcements of Senate interest without objection. The following member will be excused from today's session, Senator Gimsey, all day. Announcements of Senate interest. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Marty asked me, because he just had to leave the chamber, tomorrow over the lunch hour, the Health, Housing, and Family Security meeting is going to have an informal lunch viewing of a PBS special called Unnatural Causes. It is a documentary series on tackling the root causes of our alarming socioeconomic and racial inequities in health. Recent scientific findings suggest that there's much more to our health than bad habits, health care, and unlucky genes. So the committee chair will be providing the popcorn. Bring your lunch. I know there are committees meeting both before and after, but this is from 11:30 to 1 in room 318.
Other announcements of Senate interest. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Judiciary Budget Division will meet in 30 minutes following adjournment. Room 125.
Sir Pappas.
The Senate Higher Education Committee is going to meet immediately, but we will be adjourning at 2 o'clock. So members, please come immediately to room 123.
Other announcements of Senate interest?
Mr. President.
Senator Shy.
Mr. President. Members of the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee, our 12:30 meeting is going to start at 1:30. If you have to bring your lunch, come and sit and eat in the corner. We have some bills to get through, and it's really important. Senator Pappas's bill will be first. It'll take about 10 minutes, and then we have to do 8 other bills. So please be there on time. Thank you.
Any other announcements of Senate interest? Any other announcements? Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, we are going to meet at 8:15 in the morning. The plan is only to establish a quorum so that we can process committee reports later in the day. So I would move, Mr. President, that the Senate adjourn to Friday, April 3rd, 8:15 a.m. And I think, Senator Senjum, it's somebody else's turn to bring the donuts. Is that correct? So yeah, the donuts will be provided. So
before we do that, Senator Fischbach?
Mr. President, would Senator Pogemiller yield?
He will yield. Senator Pogemiller?
President, Senator Pogemiller, are we going to be assured that what is going to be happening tomorrow? Because it is Friday. There are a lot of rural members who head out. And I know that we've had an issue last week that there was votes taken, and I want to be assured that that we will have plenty of time. If we're coming back in the Friday afternoon, we will have plenty of notice of to what's going to be happening and when.
Mr. President, Senator Fischbach, yes. I don't anticipate that there's anything the executive branch needs done tomorrow, so I think we'll be fine.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, I just want to be assured that we will have notice and at least, you know, I would say a half an hour. I think I mentioned half an hour or 45 minutes last time. I think even if we're not, if the plans haven't changed, I think that's only the considerate thing to do is to give us some notice of to when we're going to come back in.
Sir Pogemiller, we need to hold off on your motion for just a second here. Okay, we can proceed. Senator Pogemiller renews his motion that the Senate adjourn until Friday, April 3rd at 8:15 a.m. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned.